On this week's show, we're going to be revealing the 7 shocking property laws that I certainly know I wish I knew an awful lot sooner.
And in the news, how a couple earned $17 million tax-free, the Chelsea Mansion, the big HMRC, at their own game.
Amazing. So this episode, we're going to be breaking down the laws and loopholes that most property investors either ignore, misunderstand, or find out about years too late, when they've already overpaid in tax, missed a killer deal, or unnecessarily begged for planning permission when they didn't need to. So these are all legal strategies. They're not dodgy backdoor moves. And if you're in property and you don't know these yet, I'll be honest, you're leaving thousands of pounds on the table. So do you want to kick us off?
Oh, well done.
Shocking property law.
Shocking property laws.
Number one.
Stamp duty, the uninhabitable property exemption. All right, this is a good one, this one.
It is a good one. Especially if your strategy is BRR. So we know stamp duty is really expensive right now. I mean, it's expensive for first-time buyers. But if you're a buy-to-let landlord and you're buying additional properties, it's like 10% on top. So yeah, it's super, super expensive. Interestingly, stamp duty was a law that they brought in. I can't remember which war it was, but we're talking hundreds of years ago. They brought it in and they were like, oh, just while we're at war, we're going to bring in this temporary tax called stamp duty just to help us fund the war. Hundreds of years later, here it is, getting increased on a regular basis.
I feel like that's like a standard thing they do, though. Bring something in as temporary that then just becomes, because people don't, there's not such a uproar when it's temporary. But then the next minute, you find out it's permanent. You've gone past the stage where you'd normally cause uproar because it was only temporary.
You're used to it.
Yeah. So it's a clever way, actually.
Is this a strategy that we should be using?
Temporary going on a break.
Temporary, yeah. Well, that's a good example, actually. On a break, you split up.
Yeah, but you call it on a...
it doesn't feel as... because you're on a break.
Yeah, so you could get back together. But how many people... It must be quite a small percentage of people that go on a break actually end up getting back together. They just split up, don't they? But it's like we split up actually 6 months ago now when we thought about it, but we've just been on a break.
It's better than saying we split up.
I wasn't announcing that as like
then
we
got back
were.
Together. No, we're obviously not on a break. We're properly split up already. All right. So yes, so they brought it in. So yeah, you're talking 5% extra. So it's very, very expensive. Big tax that you're gonna pay every time you buy a property, which is quite annoying. So what is this?
So the house has got to be uninhabitable. Yeah. So it says what qualifies. So people are thinking, what does that mean? So you've got to have no functioning kitchen, bathroom, heating or utilities.
There's
so
some
you
of the
really
things.
Couldn't live there.
They've tightened the laws on this recently. They've been a bit, because what people were doing is stuff like, hey, I'll buy your house off you. Do you mind just taking the boiler out before I buy it?
Yeah. Ripping the bathroom out.
Ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, if someone was living in it before you bought it,
then it's
habitable. Someone was living in it. It's got to be like proper bad.
Proper like derelict, really, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's what we call derelict.
Derelict houses. So if you're...
You do find them. Like driving along, we went for a walk yesterday after one of our events and there was clearly a few, wasn't there, that just look no windows in. Well, no one can live there. Actually, how does that work? Because surely if it's got no windows...
If it's easily fixable, then they're like,
you can't
no.
just take the windows out and be like, anywhere.
Nothing like that. You can't. It's got to be properly unlivable. Like if it's got serious structural damage, for example, that counts. But because people were kind of taking the mickey with this rule a little bit, they've tightened up. But it's still very valid. So for example, do you know the deal my mom and Tim did in the Peak District where they bought a barn?
Yeah.
Well, it's obviously uninhabitable, right?
Yeah, because so it's not
zero
even...
like, stamp duty. I say zero stamp duty. It's actually commercial rates of stamp duty.
Yeah.
So you pay 0% on the first 150 grand, 2% from 150 to 250 grand, and then 5% on anything above a 250. But if you're buying an uninhabitable, derelict property, chances are you're going to buy it quite cheap.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I would always recommend getting a surveyor's report to prove it. So if HMRC look, you can go, no, it actually was deemed uninhabitable rather than you just made the decision it was.
Yeah. And with all these rules, and we'll get onto this with our news article later where HMRC have challenged.
Yes.
With all these rules, you can't just go, oh yeah, it's uninhabitable. Ha ha, I'll put it through. You've got to be able to evidence it, prove it. But if you find derelict properties, if that's your strategy, you can save an awful lot of money.
And you do. Like when I'm looking through, there's more out there than, sorry, I do get a bit close to the mic. There is more out there than you think. Like some you look at and you think, wow, that really is, like there's nothing to it. There's no bathrooms, there's no kitchen. Like someone actually couldn't live there. Mm. And I think, you know, we were talking on last week's show about how it's not pleasing to the eye.
Yeah.
So a lot of people move past it. But there's more out there than you would think.
Yeah, 100%. So there you go. Top tip right there. Uninhabitable properties. And we've bought uninhabitable properties. Yeah. For example, Ribsford House.
Yeah.
It's uninhabitable. You couldn't live there. The roof's caving in. Yeah. Right. Although we actually got
would
that on
uninhabitable
dwelling relief.
Mold.
If it's really bad.
Because actually mold's really toxic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gotta be it's
gotta
be really bad. If you could just fix it with a bit of mold treatment, then no. If you need to knock it down and rebuild it because the mold's so bad.
The reason I thought of that was Ribsford House.
Yeah.
Had insane mold because the roof had been leaking.
Yeah. Well, they've actually scrapped this, but when we bought Ribsford House, because there was like 17 apartments, we got it under multiple dwelling relief.
Yeah.
So it was even cheaper. Now they've scrapped that now. Although, if you buy six or more properties in the same transaction, you also get commercial stamp duty rates as well. So I didn't want to say that because people probably aren't looking to buy six or more properties in one go, but there you go. There's another little hack. Anyway, that's a little bonus one. That's
bonus.
Still part of number one. Stamp duty hack.
1.5.
Number two.
Grandfather rights for HMOs in Article 4 areas.
Now, I remember this very well in Wolverhampton. So one of my first jobs in property when I was first getting started, because I think it's important. If you're going to get into property, you want to understand the market. So I bought my first property, but then I wanted to get into HMOs.
Yeah.
So what I did was I set up a HMO management company along with you. I know you know this, but I'm telling people at home. A HMO management company, and we managed loads of HMOs in the Midlands area specifically. A lot of them were in Wolverhampton.
Yeah.
Wolverhampton was like an up and coming area. This was before
lots of students, the university.
There was, although we didn't actually go for the students, but there was a lot.
But I mean, that's why it was so popular there. We didn't, but
we were professionals. But 100%. So it's a great area, and they brought in Article 4. So for anyone that doesn't know what Article 4 is, Article 4 is basically the removal of permitted development rights. So permitted development is where the government say, look, there's certain things that you can do without planning permission. So for example, you can turn a residential property, which is a C3 property, into C4, which is a HMO. You can turn it from one to the other without needing planning permission. When Article 4 comes in, they go, actually, we're removing that right. So if you want if you want to turn a normal house into a HMO, you now need planning permission. So it doesn't mean you can't do it, but you've got to think there's a reason they've brought Article 4 in.
Well, they bring it in, don't they? Because an area gets taken over and suddenly everyone creates HMOs. And I do, however much Article 4, and this is probably a controversial opinion, I do kind of understand it too. Because what will happen is, like back in the day, it happened in Wolverhampton. Suddenly there's loads of students and there's loads of professionals looking. So everyone starts doing HMOs. But actually then, they're actually lacking just normal houses because all these houses are getting converted. And then just a normal family are struggling with places to live and they don't want the whole city to just be HMOs.
Yeah.
So I do understand.
I get it as well.
I do think then they start dishing out Article 4 like it's...
Well, I totally get it. I think it's fair enough, to be honest, that they bring it in. I don't think it's a big deal. Specifically when they bring it in like certain streets, it's like, no, we want that to be a residential family street.
Yeah.
You know, city centre is a bit different because it's all flats and stuff anyway. But yeah, that's what it is.
New housing estates.
Yeah.
I kind of get it because you want to live on that estate with loads of the families.
And it does tend to attract, I mean, I love HMOs, I think it's a great strategy, but it does tend to attract people that obviously can't afford a flat. And if someone can't afford a flat, it's a slightly lower, I don't want to be offensive, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You get what I'm
saying.
Anyway, here's the loophole, and we use this really well in Wolverhampton. When Article 4 comes into an area, so we knew Article 4, they announce it. It's not like it just happens. Bang, Article 4 overnight. They'll say,
did they say it was temporary?
No.
they didn't
try that tack this time. In June 2027, we're going to bring Article 4 in Wolverhampton, whatever it is. They'll announce the date. Not normally quite that far away, but they'll announce the date. So what everyone was doing in Wolverhampton is they were like, hold on a second. This means you can't get more HMOs in Wolverhampton. This means if I buy a property in Wolverhampton now, turn it into a HMO before Article 4 comes in, I won't be able to get any competition. Because suddenly, no one else can put a HMO here. So I've kind of got the market cornered, right? Without loads of other people setting them up and setting them up and setting them up. And this is called grandfather rights. So if you're looking to get into HMOs, a really good strategy is to find areas where Article 4 is coming in, buy it, turn it into a HMO. You can just do it. We're in planning permission.
And that's yours forever.
And that's it. Now, to protect it, you might want to get a certificate of lawful use. When I did it in Wolverhampton, all that Wolverhampton Council asked for was an AST. Show me a room-only AST contract for the room, and then we'll go, yeah, that's fine. That's all you needed to do was actually put a tenant in.
Yep.
So I remember like stressing, because they were like, we need to complete. You need to turn it in within 2 days.
Yeah.
Like, oh, goodness. Like trying to get it all ready right before the deadline. But great rule. Grandfather rights for HMOs in Article 4. Great little hack if you're looking to invest in HMOs.
Yes.
All right.
Point three.
Number three.
You go for it.
Permitted development rights. Now, there's loads of permitted development rights, and they're all brilliant. But the one I want to particularly focus on right now is something called Class MA. Okay, so what is Class MA? Class MA is where you can convert a commercial property, which is Class E, into a residential property, which is C3, without planning permission. Under permitted development.
Yep.
Now, you must apply for prior approval, so you can't just do it. You need to tell the council, oh, by the way,
I'm doing this
commercial building here. Yeah, we're turning it into this. You can't change like the outside of the building. You can't change the look of the building under this, but the interior, you can totally strip it out. So I was giving an example on Instagram. People I filmed outside a bank. There's two banks, more actually, in Beaconsfield. It's like, look, these banks here, they've closed down. they're just sitting here empty. No one wants to buy them. They're right there on the high street, right on Beaconsfield Golden Triangle. It's like you could literally buy these banks. You could convert them into flats, all under permitted development. Someone's just bought one, apparently, someone said in the comments, for half a mil, which is a bargain.
Which is a bargain, yeah.
Where it is. You probably get six apartments there.
Yeah.
And it's cleaning up the high street. So I think this is awesome. There used to be quite strict criteria around the sizes of the properties. That's now gone. So it doesn't matter how big it is. There was also criteria around the length of time it'd been empty and things. They've really relaxed it. The only thing is, in a conservation area, so a lot of town centres are in a conservation area, they protect the ground floor.
Yeah.
So in a conservation area, if there's like shop, 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 you can't just go shop, 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 house, shop, shop.
Yeah, but that's like any development you've got. It's got to be in fitting, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, places start to look a bit ugly rather than you go somewhere and it looks nice and everything. What's beautiful about England is like you go to so many nice places. If you started having that, for example, where it was just like random developed houses that should clearly be a shop.
Yeah.
It would start just looking higgledy-piggledy. So again, a bit annoying, but I totally do get that rule. They are there. Those rules are kind of there to make everywhere still look.
Yeah, exactly. And you can still do it above. So if you've got like let's say there's an M&S that's closed down and it's got three stories, you can still turn flats.
So do you know the banks you were talking about?
Yeah.
What would you do? So the top, so the one bank, for example, has got multiple floors. So I could see the top two floors there.
I haven't checked if it's conservation area. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's conservation area or not.
But you did say you can't change the look, and the ground floor does look like a bank. So it'd look a bit.
I don't think it does. I think it's fine. It's got windows. It's got, you just, if you actually go and look at it, it would actually be absolutely fine.
Would you just think?
Okay, but say
it didn't then.
Say it didn't. If it looked ridiculous.
Would you keep a shop on the?
You could keep a shop on the ground floor and then put it above. You can't do it, like I mentioned, conservation area. You can't do it if it's Article 4.
Okay.
So not the HMO version of Article 4, but they could say, look, we don't want any more. I think in Brighton, I was looking at a deal in Brighton, and that is Article 4. Someone sent me a deal over. I was like, this is Article 4, mate. He's like, oh, I thought you were doing permitted development. No, you can't. So okay. Article 4 to stop Class MA. So there's certain types. So quite a bit of London. I remember looking...
Probably places that they want to stay looking exactly...
They want to keep it as is. Which is fine. Yeah. I get it. It's not a problem. Or places like a national park. You can't do it there. But pretty much brilliant, fantastic strategy. Although national parks, you can do other stuff like Class Q, where you can turn a barn into a house.
Yeah. There's always something, isn't there? I always think some of the rules people get all like upset about, but you think they're still fine. You can't do that one right in the centre of that town, but there's still loads to go at.
Yeah, 100%. If you're enjoying the show, could you do me a real favour? Hit the subscribe button. Over 76% of viewers aren't subscribed to the channel. Honestly, it makes a massive difference to the channel. It's free for you, but it really helps us to keep doing this.
So, number four, 5% VAT on renovating long-term empty properties. This is a good one. This is exciting.
This is a good one. So, what actually is it? So, if you've got a residential property that's been empty for more than 2 years, well, number one, it's a good chance it's going to be derelict.
Yep.
Right, if it's no, so maybe not. But if you did buy a derelict property, it's been empty for a couple of years.
Quite often, if they're empty for 2 years,
you've got no stamp duty, which is great. But also, because they want to encourage us to renovate derelict properties, which is good, the builders or the contractors that you get into the works can charge you 5% VAT instead of 20%.
And obviously, they've got to be VAT registered.
Yeah. So this means that any work done by the VAT registered builder.
Yeah. So it can't be just like Dave the builder from down the road.
No. Yeah. You want a proper builder. Most builders will be VAT registered though, if they're a proper building firm.
Maybe if they're not called Dave.
If any materials they supply and install, their works, all the costs, 5% VAT. I mean, that's like a 15%.
Yeah.
Saving, it's massive.
And you could easily just not know that and just...
And just pay the 20... Yeah, because they don't care. They might not tell you.
Yeah, why?
They might not even know it's been empty for 2 years.
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't, would they? Well, not necessarily.
Yeah, you could easily overpay on that.
Yeah.
It doesn't apply to DIY purchases. So, for example, if you're buying a kitchen from Wix...
It's got to be everything from the team, hasn't it?
Yeah.
That it's basically, they've got to go and get the materials and install it through their company to get the...
And you can't reclaim the VAT unless you're VAT registered. So it's, if you're setting up a company to do this project, you want it to be a VAT registered company.
Yeah.
Other than that, you do need to provide proof, council tax records, utility bills, whatever it is, just to prove, again, everything you do like this, you've got to prove it.
Yeah.
You'll be able to prove it. But yeah, what a little saving that is.
Yeah, great.
Straight away.
On.
Boom, number four. Sorry to interrupt myself, but if you've ever wondered how some investors can earn up to £1 million a year and pay zero tax, totally legally, I'm running a completely free 1 hour webinar where I'll be teaching exactly that. The link will be in the description. All right, back to me talking again. All right, number five, zero rated VAT on new dwellings from commercial conversions. So that is a bit of a mouthful there. What does that actually mean? Well, I suppose we're sticking on the theme of VAT, first of all.
Yep.
We're also kind of sticking on the theme of the previous one, which was turning a commercial unit, Class E, into residential. You can do this without planning permission, which is great. So what does this rule mean? Because some people, when you say, oh yeah, it's zero rated VAT when you sell the units, it's like, hold on a second, aren't all house sales zero rated VAT? Like, why?
Why is that so good?
Why is that an advantage? Like, who cares? But if you convert a non-residential building, like a shop or an office, into new dwellings and sell them, the sales are zero rated VAT rather than no VAT. They're not VAT exempt. So why does that actually matter? What's the difference? If you're a VAT registered company, that means you can still reclaim the VAT on the construction works, the materials, the professional fees. You're a VAT registered company, but then when you sell it, you don't pay any VAT. So a common mistake is assuming that there's just no VAT to pay.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, let's just forget about VAT because we're selling residential properties. But you're missing out.
Because you've paid VAT on all the materials and everything,
So you're missing out on tens of thousands of pounds, probably, in reclaimable costs.
Yeah. That's a really good one, actually.
Yeah. So the tip is register for VAT and make sure your project qualifies. Or listen, always take these tips. Speak to a VAT expert before you go and do it. Don't just like, oh, I heard it on the podcast, because you might get it slightly wrong. But if you're buying commercial property, you can sell it without that, but you can set up a VAT registered company and still reclaim a lot of VAT on all the costs, which is pretty awesome. All right, number six.
Oh, capital allowance on fixtures in commercial or mixed use property.
We've actually made a massive use of capital allowances with one of our, multiple, but one of them has already come through, of our service accommodation properties. But that was actually capital allowances on acquisition. So when you buy a property, like we bought this property, what are you actually buying? Well, you're buying the building, you're buying the land, you're buying the roof, but you're also buying the kitchen, you're buying the boiler, you're buying the heating system. Some of those costs can be claimable as capital allowances. So we bought the property for 237 grand and we had a capital allowance expert look at it and they were like, well, we reckon 22.5% of this purchase is allowable for capital allowances.
Yep.
So that means, I think it's 54 grand or there or thereabouts. So 54 grand of the 237 grand purchase was allowable. So that means when we start making profit from this property, the first 54 grand is tax-free.
Yeah.
That's years, 3-4 years of profit paying no tax on it, renting out a service accommodation. Now, this rule has actually been scrapped for furnished holiday lets, unfortunately, but it's still applicable for commercial or mixed-use properties. And not necessarily just on the actual purchase. You can also do it on your refurb. So I mentioned the barn earlier. My mom and Tim bought the barn. They spent 60 grand buying the barn. Spent 80 grand converting it into a serviced accommodation unit, or thereabouts. Now, 63 grand of that 80 grand was on stuff like the generator, all stuff that could be claimed as capital allowances.
Yep.
They then got a new mortgage on it, because they put the value up to like 200 grand, refurbed it, pulled out all their money, but they've still got that 63 grand sitting there of capital allowances. So again, they can now earn 63 grand.
Before they have to pay any tax.
Yeah. One little caveat is you can only do claim stuff once. So if you bought a property like we bought...
The next person can't...
Can't claim it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it can only be claimed once. But if you're doing the refurb and you're doing the stuff, keep a track. What am I spending here? Again, you're not going to know. You need to speak to a capital allowances expert and show them this is the refurb.
Oh, yes. We didn't just do it ourselves and decide how much capital allowance we were.
No. They'll look at it. That you answer all the questions, show them, evidence it all, show them all. They'll go, right, X amount. But you could earn up to like £1 million. If you buy a commercial unit, let's say you bought a £4 million commercial unit.
Yeah.
And they went, right, £1 million of it is claimable as capital allowances. You're just literally buying it. Now you can earn £1 million tax-free. A capital allowances is just a brilliant and amazing one if you're buying commercial property, mixed-use property. And again, you're also paying less stamp duty.
Yeah.
Because it's commercial. It's just awesome. All right.
You seem very excited
excited about the capital allowances one. Number seven.
The DIY VAT refund scheme for new builds and conversions.
So HMRC does allow non-VAT registered individuals to claim back VAT on building materials used in a new build dwelling or a conversion of a non-residential building into a home. You've got to submit the claim within 3 months of completion. It applies only to new qualifying dwellings and not general refurbs. But just a tip, if you're doing anything like that, keep all the original VAT invoices. It's got to be in your name.
That's quite crazy, isn't it? Being able to claim VAT when you're not VAT registered.
Yeah. Keep photographic evidence of all the build stages.
That's really good, isn't it? That's almost like a bit out there for HMRC.
Yeah.
To just go, oh yeah, you claim the VAT. No, you don't need to be VAT registered.
Yeah.
That's a really good one people should take advantage of. Obviously, it has to be new builds, conversions, but I like that one.
I like it as well. All right, number eight.
No stamp duty on garden splits if bought separately.
Yeah, so what's this? So basically, if you look through the no stamp duty rules, we talked about one of them earlier. Well, we touched on six properties or more, you get no stamp duty as well. If you buy land, you get or forest land or whatever, and it's not attached to a house, it's not a garden.
Yep.
You can get commercial rates of stamp duty. If you're buying land that comes with a garden or whatever, then it isn't. You've got to pay residential rates of stamp duty. So what this tip is, and I'll give you a good example of this. So my mom, again, of one of her great deals, my mom bought a property in Warsaw. And she, the reason she bought the property, she noticed it had a nice lot of land to the left of the property.
Yep.
Enough to build another house on. And she thought, I'm going to buy the house. I'm going to split the title. So I'm going to keep the house as it is, but I'm going to split the title so the garden is separate. She then got planning permission to build a 3-bedroom house on the land. And then she sold the land with the planning permission. Great deal. What was nice is the property was actually run down. It's Arrow Road.
You know, yeah.
The property was actually run down already. So it was that she refurbed the property. Yeah. That was a BRR in its own right.
Oh, it was a phenomenal deal.
And the land was just the absolute cherry on the cake. Yeah. Which is why she took a punt on it, because she didn't have planning permission or whatever in place. Great deal. But what they're saying is, because you've split the title, when you sell that land, that now also applies for commercial rates of stamp duty. So it would be nothing on the buyer, which makes the land more valuable, which means you can get more money for it.
Yeah.
Because when they're looking at their costs, they haven't got to take that into consideration. So great tip. If you're buying garden land, split the title, buy it separately, save on stamp duty. Awesome tip. Final one.
Make it a good one.
Paperwork, not brickwork. How you can add value to a leasehold property without getting your hands dirty, without doing any building work, without doing pretty much anything at all, literally all through paperwork, and it is extending the lease.
Yeah.
That's a super exciting time to extend leases right now.
It is. We've got a few we're extending, haven't we?
The government are getting rid of leaseholds.
Yes.
They're getting rid of them. So they want to phase it out. They're making it really easy to extend the leases. But the cool thing is, this hasn't come in yet. It's just on the way. But because everyone knows it's coming, you can use it to negotiate. So if you find a property that's got a short lease, anything less than 80 years, classes are short, it knocks value off the property. If it's got less than 50 years, you could literally lose 50% or more off the value. So if you've got a 200 grand flat, you might be able to pick it up for 100 grand because it's got less than 50 years on the lease. But we know it's worth 200. So normally you'd extend it and it would cost you around about half of the value. So in this case, 50 grand. So you spend 50 grand extending it, it would now be worth 200 again. But the government have said, no, it's not fair. Marriage value, it's too expensive. We're going to drop it to about 25%.
It's a lot then, isn't it?
Not really.
No, because actually they don't.
They're targeting people that homeowners, not the freeholder.
Yeah.
It's not unlike them at all. But we can still benefit from it.
Yeah.
So if you can find properties of a short lease, you can agree an extension. You can make an order. It's basically a BRR deal, but with no work.
Yeah.
It's
brilliant.
Elijah.
Yeah.
Brilliant deal. Like, flabbergastingly good. All money out and some. BRR deal.
That was great, wasn't it?
Yeah. Awesome. So there you go, guys. They are at 9 property hacks. It's now time for this.
In the news this week, how a couple earned $17 million tax-free. The Chelsea mansion that beat HMRC at their own game.
So this is quite an interesting story. So I'll sort of break down.
I love it.
Kind of what happened. So
when someone beats HMRC.
Buy a property in Chelsea for 9.75 million. They demolish it. They rebuild their new home, which is now a shiny £27 million property in Chelsea. 18 months later, they sold it after buying it. Now, because they bought it as their main residents.
Made quite a lot of money on it, didn't they? That didn't
millions.
People
17 million.
The people that wanted it paid
something like that. 17, yeah. I think it was 17 million, something crazy. An awful lot of money they made on it. HMRC, because it's their main residence, you don't pay tax when you sell your main residence. Yep. You don't pay capital gains tax. And HMRC are like, no. That is not your main residence. That is an investment property. You're basically a property developer.
Yeah.
You got to pay tax on it. And they ruled against them. So the couple took them to court. And the court had a look at it and assessed everything. And they ruled in favor of the couple. So they've managed to earn all that money and pay no tax, which is great. So the reason they managed to do that is for a couple of reasons. So if you're using this as a strategy and you're buying your personal home, to live in, but then your plan is to sell it down the line, kind of like what they did.
Do you think that was their strategy, or do you think that is just how it fell?
I think it probably was their strategy.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. But it might not be. It might not be. Genuine.
And this is the thing. It might not be. So there's a few things that they did that basically kind of proved that they were planning on living there. So they did the basic things. So they changed the council tax into their own name.
Yeah.
They went on the electoral roll.
Yeah, they threw parties.
They threw some social events there. They moved wine into their wine cellar. They moved.
Get their parties right, don't they?
Of course. They moved all the stuff there. So they very much made it like acted like it was their own home, which kind of proved the intent.
But didn't you just say they lived there for 18 months?
It was 18 months later. So I imagine it was like, I don't know how long the project took to complete.
Oh, so they only owned it 18 months in total.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I did read that I think they only lived there 3 months.
3 months. Yeah. So it's cutting it a bit fine. The rule is, if it's your own personal dwelling and you sell it, you don't pay tax. Obviously, people do stuff like this to get around it. I would say, if that's your strategy, keep it a bit longer. Yeah,
maybe 6 months is a little bit more.
But do everything they did. Prove that it's yours, actually live in it. You know, I hear people say stuff like on social media, oh, you don't need to live in it, just tell them you live in it. It's like,
But do you know what does make me a bit thinking, was it really their intention? Because apparently it sold for way above the asking price. Well, there wasn't an asking price, but what it'd be deemed to be worth, the person who bought it paid beyond that.
Over the odds.
Because they were like, we want this property. A bit like we were saying the other day about, well, every property's got its price. If someone said, I'll pay you 10% more than this property's worth, we'd move.
Mm.
And it makes out that the person came and went, we want this, we've seen you renovate it.
It might well be totally genuine. But the thing is, let's say you're thinking, I'm going to buy a property and I'm going to renovate it and then I'm going to sell it and then I'm going to do it again. We know people that do it again and again and again and again and they get away with it. The reason I think this raised eyebrows is the amount.
Oh, yeah, because they, like you say, they've made 17 million.
If someone's selling a property tax-free and making 200 grand tax-free, HMRC, 17 million, that's the different kettle of fish. But the lesson is you've got to genuinely live in it and prove, again,
I think if you don't move your bills over, I think
go on the electoral roll, have events there, move all your stuff in.
Yeah.
If you left your stuff in storage and they were like, you were never planning on.
And like you say, moving your wine cellar, like they said it was an insane amount of wine, like expensive wine. That's quite an effort, isn't it? I mean, it's not that much effort to make 17 million tax free, but it's still quite a big effort, isn't it? If you weren't planning on living there, you probably wouldn't bother moving your wine in.
No.
And it did give it grounds for, like you say, they ruled, no, they did have every intention to live there until they got offered this.
Exactly. And the principles, obviously this is massive figures, they're earning a lot of money, they're obviously very rich, but the principles are the same. You've got to evidence it, you've got to prove it, but it's a brilliant strategy.
Yeah.
To buy, but genuinely, yeah, I do plan on living there, but I only plan on living there for 2 years. So you buy a property, you 2 years later, you sell it.
What do you think do you think 2 years is the one and you don't raise any suspicion? Or do you think, how quick do you think you can move out without raising suspicion? Yeah,
I would probably live in it at least a year.
Yeah. And then you think you'd.
I think people. I know people that do one a year where they buy a property, live in it while they're doing it up, have it a year. It takes a little while to sell as well, doesn't it? But have it about a year, sell it, move on, do another one. Yeah. I think less than a year.
I'm so chuffed though they won that. I feel like if they hadn't.
Well, they won it after 3 months, so who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, very interesting story, isn't it?
Yeah, that was it. Oh, I liked that.
That was very apt as well with the other points. Yes. There you go, there's another one for you.
Tax-free, 17 mil tax-free.
Perfect. Right, guys, thanks very much for listening. I'm Russell Leeds.
And I'm Anna Leeds.
We'll see you next time.